Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and glad to have you along today as we begin the program by taking a look at water quality issues certainly with our public water supplies. We can also probably get into private wells as well. Ken Bradbury and Madeline Gottkowitz are guests. They're hydrologists with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey in Madison. And one of the reasons we asked them along was because they've been a part of a team which has completed a one-year study of viruses in deep water supply wells. So I thought it was kind of interesting. I hadn't thought about viruses in our water supply, and we certainly want to talk about that. Survey was done here in the Madison area, but it certainly could relate to other areas of the state as well. So we're glad to have them along. Certainly, if you have questions about the virus side or about other issues, too, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Ken, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Larry.
Madeline, great to see you as well.
Thanks for having us.
All right. This study, looking at viruses in our water supply, what were you studying? I mean, how did you do it?
Well, Larry, it was a really interesting process. We had some funding a few years ago to look at groundwater flow to deep wells in the Madison area, and as part of that, we decided we would sample the wells for viruses, and the people at the Marshfield Clinic who were able to analyze the water said, well, that's a waste of time. You're never going to find any. Nobody's ever found viruses in such deep water before. So it was kind of a shot in the dark. And we did that work, and we were quite surprised to actually find some human viruses in very deep water, 800 or 900 feet below the surface here, which is may have been kind of a world record, actually.
Yeah, so those viruses had to start up on top and go down 800-900 feet?
Exactly. These are viruses that a virus is something that has to live in a living creature, and these viruses are human viruses, so they originate in people, and so they had to start on the surface and somehow move deeply into groundwater. So that was very interesting finding for us, and kind of that's got us started on this research path.
Surprised the folks at Marshfield.
It surprised them. They had found viruses in shallow groundwater in wells.
Okay,
in
so that places. Wasn't surprising.
But to find it in such deep wells, in Madison here, we get water from wells that are around 1,000 feet deep. So that was quite a surprise.
Yeah. Madeline, what kinds of viruses were found, or were you able to determine that?
These are human enteric viruses, and that means they, again, as Ken said, they come from humans, and they would only be found in human fecal waste. And so that suggests that the source of the viruses are sewer systems, or if someone has their own on-site wastewater treatment, such as a septic system, that also is a potential source of these types of viruses. They're the types of viruses that have often been referred to as the norovirus.
Okay.
That's a fairly common one, and that basically gives people intestinal trouble, and it's rather unpleasant. So we're hoping that with this research, we can better understand how these types of episodes of disease might move into a community and through the community. And, of course, we were surprised to find them in these deep wells. It does suggest that our public water supplies should be disinfected. Hmm. And, indeed, many communities in Wisconsin do disinfect, but not all communities.
So, and by disinfect, chlorination?
Chlorination or ultraviolet light is another method that can be used to basically sanitize water supplies, both from microbial contaminants, bacteria, as well as viruses.
I was going to add, we should emphasize that Madison does disinfect. And
yes.
So there's not a big risk to the people in Madison drinking the water. But as Madison said, this is probably occurring in other communities, and some of which have not disinfected in the past.
Okay. So something... Well, what does a municipality do then if a municipality is not disinfecting? Should they be checking on this?
Oh, well, yes, definitely. And in fact, based partly on our work, the DNR has been revising some of the codes for requirements of disinfection for other communities, and it's recommended for many smaller communities now.
So then obviously these could pose a threat to public health.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. These do cause some illness, and it's hard to say how much, but some of our colleagues think they may be responsible for a couple of the times everybody gets sick a year, you know, with the flu. So.
And we should also point out for listeners that some communities in Wisconsin are on surface water sources, for example, in Milwaukee. And surface water water supply systems are routinely disinfected.
Yeah, so...
So this is an issue primarily for public water supplies that rely on groundwater.
Yeah, so Milwaukee gets its water from
Lake Michigan,
so... Obviously, there has to be some treatment going on.
Right. And historically, Larry, in Wisconsin, that groundwater has been assumed to be very pure. And by and large, it is very good.
Yeah.
So it's gotten a lot less treatment than a surface water source would have. And that actually saves communities a lot of money because, for example, here in Madison, there is no big water treatment plant for drinking water. As in Milwaukee, they have a big facility for that. So historically, we've not treated groundwater very much at all.
Well, we have some callers online who want to visit with you. Let me remind you, if you would like to join in, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Greg in McHenry, Illinois. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
No, thank you. I had two questions. One question was, how often are municipalities or even townships required to test their groundwater? And then the second one was on the MTBE levels that are actually in groundwater these days, and how often are they required to test for that as well, and what the high limits may be, if you know what they are.
All right. When Greg says MTEB, what is he referring to there?
Well, MTBE is I won't try to say the whole name.
I'll give it a go. It's methyl tert butyl ether.
There you go.
Oh, that doesn't sound very good.
it's an additive. They call it an oxygenate. It's an additive that was put in gasoline to increase fuel economy. But it's proven to be a real bad actor in groundwater. When there are spills of gasoline at service stations, the MTBE seems to persist in groundwater even more than the other gasoline products. So it has been an issue in shallow groundwater.
So that's what it is. And I expect, are there federal standards? And you know, Greg's calling from Illinois. I expect there'd be some state standards depending on the state, but there'd also probably be some federal standards that would apply as well.
For MTBE, you're correct in assuming that there are federal and state standards. Typically, the state standards are consistent with the federal levels.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with the concentration that is permitted in water supplies for MTBE. I know that it's tested for routinely on a quarterly basis, as are all volatile organic contaminants.
So quarterly.
Quarterly for public water supplies. My guess would be that... numbers that concentrations you might find in urban settings might be on the order of 0.2 micrograms per liter, so extremely low.
Okay. Does the other part of the question was, what about just regular testing? How often do municipalities need to test? And is that a quarterly? That's quarterly too?
It's quarterly for certain constituents of concern, like volatile organic contaminants. For many inorganic contaminants, like arsenic and lead, mercury, it's also quarterly. However, for microbiological issues, wells may be tested daily for total coliform.
Okay.
I know that at least the Madison Water Utility tests every well every day to make sure that their fluoride and chloride levels are consistent with their expectations.
All right.
And I had one other question, if it's possible.
Okay.
The MTBE, I know, is a carcinogen that's used for processing gasoline. And from years past, I understand that there was only one processing plant in the United States at one point, several, probably 11 years ago here, that actually in Santa Monica, California, there was a court case that took the MTBE levels in that city, and they took the oil companies to court to actually facilitate and install a water treatment plant to mitigate that situation. Do you guys know if there was any other facilities?
Okay, do you guys know?
I'm not aware of any, Larry.
Okay,
I don't think in Wisconsin that's. I'm not
it hasn't
aware
come
that's
up
been
as...
an issue here.
All right.
Madeline,
I don't believe it's used in gasoline anymore because it was such a constituent of concern in gasoline.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Greg. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Jack in Oak Creek next. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I just like to comment on or question quality of water. I was in the military, so I was around the world quite a bit, and I love the water in Colorado, and I couldn't stand the water in Virginia. It was dirty and it smelled, and we wound up buying our water in bottles, as most of the military there did. And then I retired here in the Oak Creek area, and I found the water being superb, and they have international competition, and Oak Creek's water is always near top of the line, or is at the top of the line, and I'm enjoying it the day in and day out for the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
So,
what makes a good water, I bet you're going to ask. What does make a good water? How, why do we have good water there?
Well, we have good water because we have good geology here, for one thing. We have some great aquifers, generally very thick aquifers, which give you a lot of natural filtration. We have generally low mineral content in the water, and that also relates to our geology. And the caller's right. We have excellent water. And a lot of the water utilities take great pride in their water, and they have taste, as he says, they have taste tests, who has the best water. So it's kind of a neat thing. So really, Wisconsin citizens should be very proud and happy that they really have great water resources here compared to other parts of the world. It's really exceptional.
Yeah, it really is. I was thinking back to my being in, Jag was talking about being in the military and being around the world. I remember being in Pakistan doing some work there for the university, and they said, well, only drink the water at the embassy. And so I drank the water at the embassy for a couple of days, and it got sicker than a dog. And so then I drank the water everywhere but at the embassy, and I was fine. Oh, man. John in Belleville, we'll go to you. Thanks, Jack, by the way. John, hello.
Hello, everyone.
What can we do for you?
I'm wondering if the presence of these viruses may be attributed to poor well drilling technique more than actual them being present due to infiltration from the ground surface.
Well, that's a really excellent question, and it's one that we're looking into now. And we've been looking at the different potential routes that the viruses could take from the surface or the leaky sewers down there. And well construction is certainly one issue, and by that I mean that as I think the caller understands that wells might be not completely. The casing may not be completely cemented in properly, or the casings could be old, the wells could be too shallow, and there are a lot of different aspects to that. So that is one issue we're looking at.
Yeah, I was, you're not going to send down a solid 900-foot pipe. You've got sections of pipe that have to be welded together, somehow attached.
Yeah, generally, when they drill a well, they drill a hole, of course, and then they put a pipe called the casing in there, and the depth of that casing is important. Below the casing, and here in Madison, the wells are just open to the rock, but above that, the casing needs to be cemented into the rock around it. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard, difficult to put that cement in correctly. And when you're working at hundreds of feet down,
got to be careful.
So it's there's a lot of skill involved, and some people do it better than others. And then with time, some of these wells are quite old. They were drilled in maybe the 1920s, and we're still using them. And so there can be deterioration as well. So those are issues as well.
All right, there we go. Thank you very much for calling, John. Appreciate it. We are talking water quality issues with our two guests today. Ken Bradbury and Madeline Gottkowitz are hydrologists with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey here in Madison. Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Turning our attention, or we have turned our attention, to water quality issues with Ken Bradbury and Madeline Gottkowitz. Larry Mueller here. Thank you again for listening in. And Tom in Hillsboro, we turn to next. Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi there. We recently bought a rural property that has an 85-foot well, and my wife refuses to drink the water until I get it tested. And I was wondering where the best place to go to get thorough testing would be in our area here.
You're in Hillsboro.
I'm in Hillsboro, yeah. But, southwest Wisconsin.
But and that's where the well is located?
Yeah.
Okay.
We could recommend a couple different ways to go about that. One of the simplest ways is to contact your county extension office, and they can help you get bottles for testing and help you send them up to a testing lab in Stevens Point. And that would cover some constituents that you should be concerned about, such as nitrate and other other inorganic contaminants that might be more likely to encounter in a rural setting.
Are they going to test for viruses, though? I guess my question, I guess.
They will?
They will not. Testing for viruses is not commonly done. It takes a very specific method that's only done at a couple labs in the country. But one thing that homeowners should do, and they can do quite easily, is to test your water supply for bacteria. And again, I believe the Extension Office can help you with the bottles and the methods for testing total coliform.
You need to be kind of careful when you collect, and you need to use the right bottle. It's got to be a sterilized bottle. But you can get that through your county extension office.
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a cabin in North Wisconsin, so we tested our water very often. And remember, my dad was very careful about how we did that testing. Let's go to Safine in Waukesha. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I live in Waukesha, and as your guests may know, we have very hard water. Even though we use filter, still, if you boil the water, you see the residual with the naked eye. And we use water bottle for drinking, which is not environmentally friendly. So any advice? It's hard to move from Waukesha now. I wish I could go to Madison. But...
Well, okay. What about drinking hard water?
I don't think hard water is necessarily bad for you. That might be a question for your physician, of course. I've heard that it's actually
better for you.
good for your heart in some ways.
Work for Waukesha County.
Hardness is just calcium and magnesium that's in the water. That's what you see precipitating out there, and that's not necessarily something that's bad for you. It can be more of an aesthetic problem where it's causing you rings in your bathtub and things like that. But it's probably better to drink that than to drink the softened water that you may have. If you have a water softener.
Yeah, that's full of salt.
It can be full of salt, and it also can be a little more aggressive and dissolve some metals out of the pipes.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks, Safine, for calling. Appreciate it. We have an email here from Joe. We have a shallow well, 25 feet or less, at our home in Herbster, Wisconsin, less than a mile from Lake Superior. The water smells bad. Now, this is his well water. We don't use it for drinking or cooking. If we drilled a deeper well, could we expect better quality water? If he went down a lot, he's only 25 feet. What if he goes down 125 feet?
I'm somewhat familiar with that area up there. 25 feet is pretty shallow, and I don't. It might depend what it smells like. Now, if it smells like rotten eggs or something like that, maybe that you're in our organic horizon. It's quite possible that a deeper well would be better, although up there, occasionally some of the deeper wells are tend to be high in chloride, some natural salt down there. What I'd suggest is you maybe talk to local well drillers who are familiar with that area and talk to your neighbors and see how deep their wells are, because local well drillers will be quite accustomed to what's going to happen in an area with different depths. That's what I'd suggest.
Well, that makes good sense. Let's go to Garrett in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm currently going to school right now to become a geologist of sorts myself. Hydrology is one of the fields I'm looking into, and I had one of the things I'm looking into, researching about, I suppose, right now is this hydraulic fracturing. I understand we're talking about human viruses and stuff like this. This is more of just simply contaminants in water and groundwater sources. I was wondering what your thoughts and feelings on hydraulic fracturing were, and as far as filtering goes, why, say, salt and a real good charcoal filter, even for human viruses, why something like that wouldn't be sufficient.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
Okay, well, let me take the second part first. As far as filters, there may be some filters that would work for that. We're not experts in water treatment, and so I think anytime anyone is looking at a water treatment device, you need to be very careful to read the instructions or the specifications about what that filter is supposed to do. And I think there are some devices that will remove viruses, you know, in your home. So that's what I can say about that. Now, as for the hydraulic fracturing, what for those who don't know what this means, hydraulic fracturing is a way to increase the yield of a well. Basically, they pump down, generally in Wisconsin, I think it's water under very high pressure. So high pressure that it cracks the rock, and the cracks mm-hmm. allow more water to flow into the well. So it'll increase the yield
okay.
of a well. This has been a technique that's been used all over the world for many, many years. It's often used in oil production. It's used in water production. It's been controversial lately because of its use in mainly in the East in oil shale exploration and mining, basically. And there's been some reports that it's damaged aquifers and so forth. There's a whole body of work on that, and I not really can't talk about
sure.
all the pros and cons there. In Wisconsin, hydrofracturing is used to increase the yield of water wells, particularly in north central Wisconsin, and it's a technique that's been around for a while, and it works pretty well. It's nothing necessarily to be afraid of. If, like most things, if qualified people are doing it, it can probably be done pretty well.
All right. Let's turn to Jim in Winneconne. What's on your mind, Jim?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about my well. I'm up here by Oshkosh, and it's 5 years old, like most places, I had to go so deep, and the water was very hard. But my question and concern is, every now and then, the water smells like this rotten egg gas, and what causes that to come in for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks and then go out and you can't smell it? And also, somebody told me that I could prevent that by taking a rod out of my hot water heater.
Okay, well, what do you think there, Madeline?
Well, I think generally the source of those smells is either iron or sulfur-reducing bacteria. And as Ken mentioned earlier, that can be a problem in various areas in the state. Likely what the person was getting at who suggested taking a look at your hot water heater is that's another place where bacteria can flourish. So if you have this problem from your hot water, then that indeed might be the case. But if you actually can smell this odor from the well, then the problem is in the well itself. Wells, private wells in particular, may have, when they're deep, they have a lot of water standing in the wellbore and the casing, say several hundred gallons that are retained within that borehole. The borehole environment is very low in oxygen, and that can be an area where these bacteria flourish. So if you have yourself and maybe a couple other people living in your home, you may only use a couple hundred gallons of water per day. And that means that a lot of the water that you are pumping into your home has actually been sitting in that borehole for an extended period of time. And that's when it can really take on the characteristics of the microbial communities that are living in the well. So, and that also might be why this is an episodic experience at your home. One way you can deal with that is you can try to disinfect the well, and you might want to look into hiring a contractor to do that work. It's important to do it correctly, and that it's referred to as shock chlorination, and that can take care of the problem. Unfortunately, sometimes that solution doesn't last forever. The well can become re-inoculated with this bacteria.
Okay.
But it's not the water itself, where the water kind of flows through the rocks and then
it's not that?
It sounds to me, because it's episodic, that it's a problem in the wellbore itself. The caller who called in from northern Wisconsin near Lake Superior, that actually could have been a case where the bacteria were more resident throughout the aquifer. Because that sounded like it was more of a consistent problem through time. It could be a problem in the aquifer. And again, the well can become re-inoculated if the groundwater is carrying those bacteria into your well. But again, it's the well bore itself where those bacteria can thrive and really take over the water quality in the well.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have a question from John. Milwaukee's forced into several sanitary wastewater discharges this year because of all the rain we had. And his question is, he's heard that zebra mussels that invaded Lake Michigan is a water filtering machine. Do the zebra mussels actually filter out these discharges from Lake Michigan water?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not qualified. I'm not sure we're qualified to talk about that.
Well, I thought you'd take that one, Ken.
Ken, that's I thought that perfectly perfect question for you.
Yeah. No, we're not zebra mussel experts. They certainly are a good filter organism. Yeah. They cause a lot of other issues too, with clogging of pipes and so forth.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, that was a question. I know the intake pipes and outtake pipes are, you know, can be just come encrusted.
Yes.
Are they doing a better job? I mean, have they come up with ways to kind of deal with that now, or you probably don't know.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
That's for another program. Yes, we'll bring that up. We'll bring that up another time on one of the shows. Maybe Scott Craven will have an answer on that. Michael in Bear Valley, we go to you. Hi, Michael.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Got a question about a report that I just read from the Wisconsin Environment, which is a state-based, citizen-funded environmental group working for clean air and water. And it's this report that was originally published in the New York Times and Washington Post, which ranked water quality around the country. And Wisconsin was actually ranked 38th for most toxic discharges. And I was just wondering if you might have comment on this.
Sure.
Apparently, Wisconsin River received the most toxic discharges, 1.5 million pounds in 2007. I don't know if things have changed since that, but then there was also this McCain Foods and Plover, which discharged 553,000 pounds of toxic chemicals into Wisconsin River. And I was wondering I know we started out with a really great water quality here in Wisconsin, but what are we doing to maintain that?
Yeah,
well, that's a good question. I think those are surface water discharges, and we've been mainly talking about groundwater here. Certainly, those are issues. You know, the Wisconsin River has been called the hardest working river in the world, or something, because it gets so many different uses with all the dams, and we have a lot of agriculture along there, and paper mills, and all these other things that can degrade water quality if we're not careful. So. I think that's probably where some of these statistics come from. But you're quite right. We do start out with a great resource, and if we're not careful, we can degrade it, and we have in some cases.
I would think, isn't the Department of Natural Resources responsible for, you know, that sort of spillage or whatever, or release of water, Madeline?
Yep, it falls under the Wisconsin pollution. I'm sorry, the Wisconsin, a WPDES permit, Wisconsin.
There's
the
a permit.
So that, yes, the DNR regulates discharges to surface water. So every time a permit is issued, I think that the mass flux of constituents from the source is taken into account and the effect that it would have on the receiving water body.
So, and if there was an illegal or an accidental or whatever spill, then the DNR would be the agency that would be looking into it.
Yep, they do that. They have that authority. Unfortunately, one of the bumper sticker logic that holds true in our society is that the solution to pollution is often dilution. And it's disposing of all the waste that we generate through food processing, through manufacturing, have to be taken pretty seriously. And with the way that we dispose of those wastes, either by discharging to a surface water or spreading on the land surface, has a lot of implications.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I'd just like to add that it's not all gloom and doom, though. I mean, I think we have some real success stories. I mean, the Fox River, for example, 20 years ago was really bad shape, and
it's improved a lot.
It's improved a lot with better regulation and better technology with the paper mills better understanding of the system. So we can get a handle on these things and make improvements.
Yeah. Actually, I think the Wisconsin, too.
In the Wisconsin as well, yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks, Mike. Bob in Claybanks, let's go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show today.
Sure.
I had a question for your guests about these charcoal filter pitchers that I have and a number of people do have. Would those eliminate any viruses that might be coming from groundwater? And also, I've heard of some pharmaceuticals getting into some water systems as well, and I wondered if that would do anything with those.
So this is a charcoal filter you have attached to your water supply system?
Yeah, we've got it in a pitcher, but, it's basically a charcoal filter.
Okay.
Again, neither of us are experts on water treatment, so I'd suggest that whatever brand you use, you look carefully at the label on the side of the carton. I know that many charcoal filters are effective for removing microbiological contaminants. Giardia, Cryptosporidium are commonly ones that are claimed to be taken out. Viruses are very, very small, and a physical filter may not always remove them.
Right. As Madeline says, different filters are going to take out different things. So, sir, some of the pharmaceutical compounds, which tend to be organic compounds, are probably sorbed really well by a charcoal filter. Other things like, say, nitrate is probably not. So again, read the description of your particular filter, and it should tell you what it can do.
Yeah.
As a side note, too, the Department of Natural Resources has on their website a list of approved water treatment systems, so you can also go to the DNR site for a little more information on that.
Okay, so they would actually list companies and products and...
Yep, and types of filters.
And types of filters. Oh, okay. Well, that should help, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. And I'll take some more calls. 1-800-642-1234, the number. Arlene in New Berlin, it is your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for having this topic.
Sure.
I have a well on my property. I do not use it for drinking. It's mostly for watering the lawn. And every so many years, I have to have it tested. I want to know, where does that water come from? And how can I keep it clean? Because I don't want to pay a $300 water bill for watering a half acre of land, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
Well, I don't know where I don't know if you
New Berlin.
New Berlin. The water for your private well comes from quite nearby in general. And the first place to look is your own property and your neighbor's property. That's where that recharge is really originating. And to keep that water clean, you need to keep things off the land surface that might contaminate the water. It's as simple as that. It's water in Wisconsin, it generally comes from fairly nearby. And that's a powerful concept because it means that we're in control of our own destiny. We don't have to worry about what Illinois does or what happens in Iowa. What our water quality is controlled by things we do right here.
All right, there you go. Kevin in Prairie du Sac. Let's turn to you now. Hello, Kevin.
Hi. I just wanted to add on to the gentleman that got the advice to remove the anode rod from his hot water heater. There's actually three different things you can do, and an anode rod is basically, for those that don't know, a sacrificial piece of metal that is supposed to decay versus the casing of your hot water heater decaying. Yeah. You can remove it. My brother-in-law did that, had great luck with it. You can go to your plumbing supply store. They make about four different types of anode rods, and one that's specific to your water hardness and if you have a softener to reduce that odor. And then lastly, although not very energy efficient, you can simply turn up your water heater. So my recommendation would be the next time you get that smell, turn your water heater up, and it gets to a temperature that will actually kill the bacteria in the tank.
Oh,
you may find, if you turn it up too high, you may find an awful lot of calcification if you have hard water. I temper that a little bit.
You wouldn't want to be doing that all the time.
Well, you may find your water heater doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
I actually found that I turned it up for 24 hours, and it got rid of that odor for almost 2 months.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, it may be in a short period, but I wouldn't do it as a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And time for Marge and Mequon here. Marge, hello.
Hi. Hello to all of you. I have a well. I'm in Mequon, as you said, and I've switched agents that are taking care of the filtering, the iron filtering of my well. I do not soften. And I've never had this problem before. They're using an aerated system. Do you know anything about that?
All right. Aerated system for, and it's to treat what?
Iron filter.
Oh.
And I'm getting bubbles in my water as I put it into the glass.
Okay. All right.
Disperse, but after I run the glasses through the dishwasher, there's a film, which I've never had before.
I'm not sure we know enough about this particular system to comment on that. There are, as we said, lots of different treatment options out there. It sounds like it's pretty specific to your case.
Yeah, can't help you on that one, but Marge, thank you for calling. And Ken and Madeline, thank you so much. You guys have a website, do you not?
We do. It's WisconsinGeological Survey.org.
WisconsinGeologicalSurvey.org.
Correct.
Well, you'll come back and be with us again?
Hope so.
I hope to have you back. Ken Bradbury and Madeline Gottkiewicz are hydrologists with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey in Madison. And I bet if you went online, you'd probably find some more information on that survey they did or that study they did as they looked at viruses and wells. So be another place to get a bit more information on that and information on a whole lot of other things relating to our water quality. Well, you know, every home has a kitchen. Every business probably, most businesses have, may have a kitchen. But there's a new kitchen I wanted to talk with you about. It's called the Wisconsin Innovation Kitchen. And we'll discuss that next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.